think we have pretty much a perfect time to have Connie Kilmark as our guest. She's a financial counselor, founder of Kilmark & Associates, LLC. She trains and speaks publicly on topics relating to personal money management, consumer debt, consumer protection, and psychologically sensitive investment strategies. So she brings a lot to the table, and really pleased to have her with us. And certainly, as we visit with her, you are invited to join in with your questions about these topic areas and managing our money. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us, and the email address is talk@wpr.org. Connie, nice to have you with us.
My pleasure, Larry. Thank you.
I'm really pleased to have you here. I imagine, given these economic times, this is a busy time, maybe a heart-wrenching time sometimes for you?
Anguishing in some ways, but certainly a time when, after several decades of experience, it feels good to have a clear message. And that message has really not changed all that much. We're retrieving some of the wisdom of our ancestors. It's become glamorous again to live a simpler life, to live a smaller, less debt-encumbered life. And the people who have cash on hand are the ones sleeping well during the nights these days.
Yeah, boy, that's for sure. Of course, on the national scene, they have, you know, the talk has been over the years, well, spend your money and spend and keep the economy going. And if we don't spend, our economy is going to go in the tank.
Nonetheless, during a time like this, you need to be able to maintain your utilities, your normal mortgage payments, and all of those ordinary expenses that in a time of job insecurity can seem a little bit more challenging than other times. So having a substantial reserve fund on hand is excellent mental health.
Yeah, I would think you're probably not hearing much from those folks.
No, I'm not hearing that much from those folks, although those folks with significant cash reserves are very concerned about their portfolios. And it is a good time not to sell skinny cows. It's too late. The cows have already gotten skinny. So it's a good time to remember that you probably don't need all of your assets all at one time. And it is prudent not to secure those losses by selling off everything just to limit your own anxiety. The way to manage anxiety at a time like this is in part to turn back to values that cannot be depreciated or devalued, like your relationship, your friendships, your community. Invest in the things that we own in common, which are part of your common portfolio. We have schools, roads, clean water, and excellent community institutions that can very much be a source of security during a time of massive financial insecurity.
Yeah. There's a lot of regret going on out there right now. And a friend who did a remodel on his house and, you know, spent about $30,000, and he had about $30,000 in stocks that he could have liquidated. And the person said, well, why don't you hang on to them? You can borrow the money at 4% and make 8% on those stocks. And now he's a sad guy.
Nonetheless, if he's still living in that home is still a better home than it was before.
That's true.
And unless you have to sell your home, the lower values on the market of your home are probably not relevant to you. So it's not a bad time to do fixing up and improving so that when it is time to sell, you don't have to do all of that staging and improving those little jobs all at the same time.
Yeah.
There are good people out there that are looking for work, and wood is historically inexpensive at the moment, so it's not a bad time.
Not a bad time. All right. Well, Chris in Washburn has a comment or question. Let's go there. Chris, hi.
Howdy. I hope you're all doing well today.
We are.
It's a beautiful day in Madison.
It is. For a fall day up here after the snow, I'll take it. I guess my question is, and you just brought up a friend who'd done remodeling. We're in the exact same boat. We just had to do a $50,000 remodel. We had to pick up and move our house. Our foundation was crumbling out from under us.
And so you really did have to.
There was no choice about it. And I sat there, even before the financial crisis has gotten to where it's at, staring at my bank going, well, that's almost everything I have. And it was, so in terms of panic and things, you know, but we had to do it, and I know it was the right choice. And as you said about the last one, it's a better home now, and I'm thankful for that.
Mm-hmm.
But I sit there, and what's stressing me out right now is I'm looking at everything. What percentage of my income, or should the average family be looking at putting away into savings, be it combined retirement, what you're putting in your bank? What should I be looking at putting in there for a safety net? It's literally driving me nuts, the stress, just thinking about that.
Well, I think you're asking a good question, and I think that some of that energy that you're spending on stress ought to be used to ruthlessly cut out any unnecessary show and to cap off any consumer debt that you've been using chronically to pay normal expenses. Folks generally do very well with somewhere between 3 and 6 months' worth of net income in savings for simply a reserve fund. It's not an assigned fund. It's money that you have on hand for the just in case. Now, that is not including the money that you would normally segregate for things that don't come up every month. So please, whatever you do, don't think of this savings as the money that you would use for a six-month insurance premium or an occasional furnace refurbishment or whatever.
It's when the car breaks and you need that.
No, that's a normal expense
normal
of living.
Expense. Okay.
You know? So I'm talking about 3 to 6 months' worth of normal living expenses outside of everything that you can put into your model of what does your life cost.
Okay.
Some of what your life costs comes up every week and month. But then some of what your life costs, if we think of it as orbits going around the sun, some of those things are orbiting way out past Pluto, and we think of them as if they were meteors hitting the Earth, things like a roof or a furnace. In fact, they're just very slowly circling planets, and they're very predictable. If you own a house, you need to fix it. If you own a car, you need to maintain it, and you have to recapitalize the next one. If you have teeth, you need to fund the dentist. And depending on your age, that's a normal expense of living. So I would say, first, reserve fund. Second, save for those things that come up infrequently but are predictable. Last of all, after you've fully funded your retirement plan, then you think about college funding. The big mistake that many young families make is to become so motivated around a young child's college funding that they are not taking care of their own later life expenses. You can borrow for college and even help your child repay it if you're fortunate enough to be able to do that. You cannot borrow for your retirement. So that's the order in which these things are important to do.
Thank you very much for taking my call.
Yeah, thank you very much for calling. Yeah, that last part that you mentioned about the kids, that is, we think about those kids first, maybe too often.
I think too often, and I think as well, we want to make life somewhat easier for them than it might have been for us, but we're discovering that there is a kind of tenacity and perseverance that comes from exercising muscles of all sorts, will, perseverance, and so on. Can I get that from simply giving, even though that impulse to give is done through the best of love and good intentions?
Thanks again, Chris, for calling. And let's go to Ron in Edgerton next. Ron, hello to you.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Hi, Ron.
I wound up in a situation due to the very circumstances of life with way too much credit card debt.
Mm-hmm.
Is it better to just keep chipping away at it? Or is it better to take one of those programs where they negotiate with the credit card companies and put it under one payment? I'm sure you're very familiar with those.
Yes, I am. I would suggest that it depends a good deal on how important your credit score is to you. I would say that your good credit score has probably helped you get into this raft of too much debt to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
So the very first thing when you're in a hole is to stop digging, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And that means pulling your belt. And again, I'm going to say ruthlessly cut out and look for ways that you can liberate money that might be hiding. Some of it is hiding in food. Some of it is hiding in your leftovers and in your freezer. Look everywhere that you can to find ways of reducing your cost of living. That's the root of why you have the debt to begin with, that you had eyes bigger than your pocketbook.
Mm-hmm.
So end the way that it started. Then choose your tool very wisely. If you see yourself very strongly needing to do some borrowing in the future for something very significant like a home or a condo, something like that, then your credit score becomes somewhat more sensitive and important. And you might want to stay on the private side, the personal side of chipping away at those credit cards. You could transfer balances, although that also dings the credit score for a little while, the moving of the balances around. But the interest rates could be favorable. If the score is less important in the near term, then some of those organizations could be useful to you because they have bargaining power that you may not be able to achieve with your lenders, and you may be able to compromise to some degree on the amount per month that you're sending. So that will it will affect your credit score.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call very much. And Mike in Oshkosh is up next. Let's go there. Mike, thank you for calling. Hello.
You didn't even give me time to run and shut off my radio, so I'm going to try to shelter it here.
Uh-huh.
But I have both a question and a comment. My comment is that I think people need to educate themselves a little bit more on the maintenance of their vehicles, the maintenance of their home. There are some extremely unscrupulous people out there, and mm-hmm. life has become very, very predatory.
I'd like to comment on what you've said. I think that home ownership has been emphasized extraordinarily in the last 20 years. What I think is equally important is a term that I call home keepership. That is the long life that you wish to live well in the home that you've purchased. This includes seasonal tasks. It includes normal maintenance. It includes all of the things that are involved in the psychological ownership of your home, not just the legal across the title exchange table at the title company moment of home ownership. This is something that new homeowners grow into rather slowly in comparison to that legal title transfer. And it is indeed that notion of getting a network of who knows the good contractors, who knows folks, and why have they been recommended? The same thing is true with your home, with your car. The automobile often is seen as betraying us when it simply needs brake pads. Well, you know, those brakes need new pads because you stopped a lot, not because your car has let you down. So normal maintenance and holding your car for a long period of time is simply just good car ownership. That car keepership is just as important.
Oh, thank you very much for calling, Mike. Appreciate your call. Connie Kilmark, our guest today as we talk about financial fitness, managing your money here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking about financial fitness today with Connie Kilmark of Madison, a financial counselor, founder of Kilmark & Associates. Pleased to have her with us here on the Ideas Net to talk about how you and I can manage our money and do a better job of it and have a little less stress associated with all of this. Speaking of stress, and before we go to the phones, and lots of callers online, but I do want to bring up this whole business of retirement money. There was a poll, Washington Post, ABC News poll, less than half of respondents now believe they have enough money to last through retirement. Two-thirds of the respondents are in fear for their family's economic situation.
Well, what that poll didn't reveal is that before that poll was taken, they also had too little in savings. We've done a very poor job of saving for our older age. We seem to have some sort of strange pie-eyed optimism that somehow it'll all work out without our actually having to sacrifice today for some security and choices and dignity tomorrow. I think one of the mistakes that we made when we privatized retirement plans is that we cautioned folks in corporations not to give direct financial advice about investing. And as a result, lots of folks were scared to make the wrong decision about their 401ks, 403bs, and as a result, instead of seeking that advice out, they made no decisions at all, and they delayed entering. I think if we flip the notion and start getting people in, you have to opt out positively, and otherwise you will be starting to invest. I think that will be a good thing because people will enter much earlier and not leave those matching dollars on the table the way that they have in the past from fear of making bad choices. I think in terms of the folks these days that are in their 40s, 50s, and 60s, I think we need to think of our jobs as assets. We want to work as long as we can. We're living longer. Medical science is keeping us alive longer. As a result, it would be hard to save enough to simply stop and unplug from all paid work at the age of 65 if we actually might have 25 or 30 more years of life. So there might be a phasing of our retirement where in the early years we'll call those the active, still earning years. I think in these years and all the way through adult life, your physical fitness and your nutrition are actually retirement investments. The longer you stay healthy, active, full of life and joy, the longer you can, in fact, take joy in working and not see it as something you have to drag your disabled self to. Mm. I think that you ought, depending on the demographics in your family, delay Social Security on the long side and go later to those payments. That would depend to some degree on whether or not you have longevity in your family. I have a mom who's going to be 97 in January. I'm going to take Social Security on the later side as opposed to at the 62 side because I will have a long time of enjoying those larger payments. I think I'm going to bet on the fact that I might share that genetic blessing that she has. I'd say one of the most important things that you can do is to cultivate the relationship you have with your partner because your life, your friendship, and your harmonious marriage or partnership life in the intimate sense is an asset that only you can devalue. If you don't see ways to communicate around this subject, get some help because money issues last longer than child rearing. They even last longer than the challenges we face sexually. The financial issues can upend your canoe well into your older years. So that relationship, that collaborative sense of being an ally each with the other, is something that I see as well as a very important financial asset.
Thank you. Pat in Holman has been waiting a while, so let's go there. Pat, hello to you. Thank you for calling.
Hello. I'm in kind of a different situation in that I don't have any debt.
Good.
Except for a loan that I've taken out against my whole life insurance.
Mm-hmm.
And I have arranged to have any earnings from my policy to go to pay for this loan. However, so far it's only been taking care of the interest.
Yes.
And I was just wondering about whether it would be wise to pay on it to reduce the principal or a little bit of the principal being paid off.
How old are you, Pat?
I am 57 and don't have any dependents and I'm single.
So what was the point of taking that life insurance policy to begin with?
I was married at the time and we borrowed it for down payment on a house.
So you had a potential of dependents at that time, and you bought the life insurance policy to begin with in order to protect them?
I took it out when I was a teenager.
Oh, my goodness. So
yes.
You took it out a long time ago. Yes.
And I have two policies.
So then the value of it as a death benefit will be to whomever you name as your beneficiary, but nobody is absolutely depending on your earnings stream at this moment.
Correct.
For their livelihood.
Correct.
The cash value is an asset that you hold, and it could be something that you would even decide to withdraw the rest of responsibly. Now, if you think in the future that you might have call for it, since it's an asset you could never replace, you bought it so young, you could not, in fact, at this point, ever purchase so inexpensively a policy. I would say that they're charging you interest in excess of what they would ever give you in the way of growth on that cash value. So if you want to hold on to it as an asset and you have a little bit of extra money, I would pay it down sooner rather than later simply because you sound allergic to debt. You sound like you have a lot of common sense, and this is genuinely a debt that would reduce the benefit paid at the time of your death to the extent that the principal is outstanding as well as all interest that would be due on that principal. So they will reduce that benefit if you have it still outstanding.
So far, the earnings on my policy have paid off the interest
but
a minor part of the principal.
Mm-hmm.
I still think that I should pay down a little bit of the principal.
Well, if you can do without the money, I'm just thinking psychologically that you sound like the kind of person that enjoys being debt-free, and it genuinely is a debt. You borrowed from your own assets, so to speak.
Yeah. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling, Pat. Joya in Fitchburg, we're on to you now. Hello.
Thank you for taking my call, Larry.
Sure.
And Connie,
hi.
I enjoyed your lecture in the Sheraton Hotel, which you gave 2 weeks ago.
Yes, it was during Money Smart Week. It couldn't have been scheduled.
Wonderful and very educational.
It was good timing for that week to be held.
Right. I have a question which I didn't get a chance to ask you that day, is how do you look for a financial planner? What are the points you look for?
Well, this is a very sensitive question because one of the things that I don't think the profession does a good enough job of doing is saying right up front, this is how I make my living. I think it's very valuable for consumers to say, I'm looking for someone who knows more about financial planning than I do, but I want to know how you are compensated. So it's going to be valuable to ask that question. Some people are compensated simply on the sales of products. Some are compensated as a percentage of assets under management, where they manage your portfolio directly. And the theory there is that they will do better when they do better for you, and they will do worse when you do worse. And so there's an incentive. But it's a constant cost every year. That is one model. Another model, and this is generally what you will find for wealthier clients and to some degree in a modified way for folks with smaller amounts of assets, you will see fee-based financial planning where the person is paid for their thinking. But often this is a little bit difficult because if you get advice, even in a fine, well-worked-out plan, and then something like September 14th through 20th happens, whatever you got in the way of advice in June might have to be updated and refreshed. And so as a result, folks are generally a little bit leery to give you advice as if it were permanent, and then just say, here, go in peace and have a good time with my advice. That advice is in a dynamic, ever-changing world. And so you need a relationship with someone who you trust is looking out for your best interests.
Thank you very much for calling, Joy. Appreciate it. Barbara in Fort Atkinson, we're on to you now. Hi, Barbara. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. My question is, I'm 59 years old. And my company that I worked for 15 years was acquired by another company, and I was given a severance package, 6 months of my pay. I need some major repairs to my home.
Mm-hmm.
And my question is, should I use my severance package to make those repairs, or should I get a home equity loan to make those repairs and invest my money?
I would say, do you have a job yet, a new job?
Oh, I do.
Okay, that's a critical that's a critical issue. And what does that job security look like?
It's a very established company. It seems pretty good at this point.
Okay. I would say at this point, given that you have a job, you probably would qualify for a home equity line of credit. I'm actually in favor, if you're a conservative person financially, I'm actually in favor of using borrowed money at relatively historically low rates right now to do that fixing and hold on to your severance package, especially if you got it in a lump sum. I would probably be extremely cautious if you don't have a substantial additional amount of cash with that money. If that's your sort of cash reserve, I might consider it to be very conservatively placed just at interest and in insured accounts at the moment, and perhaps not so exposed to the equity market, although there are a lot of things on sale right now with market way down. Some folks with a long timeline are looking at this time as a time to invest. And I would say then fix your home conservatively with that borrowed money. And I would say don't prepay much in the way of a first mortgage at the moment because we don't know about the home value. So the more you're stuffing into your home, the larger position you're actually buying in real estate as a sector of your portfolio. And for right now, just keeping that mortgage paid and keeping your home equity line of credit going is fine. You may not in the future qualify for a home equity line if you don't stay employed. So I'd say qualify for it now while you have good, solid employment. You will look good on that application, and it will be there just in case. Mm-hmm. And then treat it as gold. Don't use it for anything that isn't truly a valuable investment in the value of your home.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. Good advice there. Jim in Janesville, your turn now. Jim, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hi, Jim.
Hi. I recently received an inheritance, and as a part of that, we're in the position now to where we could pay off our home or invest the money in investments. And I'm wondering what your take would be on that. And I have a follow-up question in regard to existing 401ks that have obviously plummeted over the last couple of months with those.
I'll do what I can. I'd say, again, as I said with the last person, if you put a substantial once-in-a-lifetime inheritance into your home, you're really buying a very substantially larger portion of your portfolio, of your overall wealth, net worth in real estate. It might be a good idea on certain conditions. If you have plenty of cash on hand already, if you have good job security, if you're maybe near the end of the loan and you just want to reallocate the monthly payment that you had been making, and it's not that large an amount we're talking about, if you're fully funding your employer-based retirement program or in some other way ensuring that you have cash or cash equivalent or other kinds of assets on hand for retirement, but I would only throw all of that into the house under those, or some of it into the house under those circumstances. I would not, if your home is already not underwater, if you're in a positive situation and you don't need to put cash into your home just to refinance it to a more favorable rate, I would say be cautious.
Okay.
And of course, if you have high interest credit card debt, and you've come to the end of all the habits that created that debt, that would be another place to get a return on some of that money.
Okay, yeah, those have been taken care of.
Okay, good.
All right.
Okay, and the follow-up as far as the 401ks, is your recommendation just to leave them alone?
How old are you?
I am 48.
You have a long time yet, and I would say right now, continue investing. I would say continue working, doing all of those common sense things. What's happening to you is happening to everyone in the world right now.
Right.
To sell off precipitously right now, it's kind of already too late. You know, we need to calm down, and we need to get this election behind us, and then we need to begin to build back the confidence in our basic economy, which in every sense of the word is going to be, we are going to do that.
Yeah.
Well, is this a paper loss at this point? I've been told that if you hang on to them, you still have the same amount of shares.
That's exactly what I meant earlier. That's exactly what I meant earlier when I said, if you have a herd of cows and the cows have suddenly gotten stomach aches and they've gotten skinny because they're not eating, would you bring all your cows to the market when they were skinny? Or would you just wait for the stomach ache to pass and see if some of those cows will fatten back up? You still have the same number in your herd.
Yeah?
Sure.
So.
Okay.
Makes sense.
Great. Sure.
Thanks, Jim. Thank you very much for calling. And Steve in Madison, we'll go to you next. By the way, you can join us at 800-642-1234. And now let's turn to Steve in Madison. Hi, Steve.
Hi there. I was just wondering what your opinion was of these online trading businesses where, like, you can do it yourself, E-Trade and Ameritrade.
Mm. I don't use those services, and I don't feel qualified to comment on the risks and the benefits. So I would say that the cost of trading is an important concept, as well as making trading so easy that people turn into speculators and day traders. I have seen clients come in with ravaged portfolios because it got so addictive, their ability to trade back and forth and then chase their losses. So be careful of the same bug that bites folks that end up as compulsive gamblers. You can end up doing just what a person in a casino does if it's so easy on those e-trading sites.
Yeah.
I never thought of that. Because I was thinking of doing that, but I guess I should just go through our regular financial planner. But
well, make sure that you understand the costs of those sales and,
right.
and make sure that you maintain your prudence. It's not a very romantic term, but
right.
it's bearing us in good stead, the notion of being prudent.
Yeah, yeah. Good luck. Thanks, Steve. David in Sturgeon Bay, on to you. Hi, David.
Yes, hello. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, I just had a question about a house payment that we can make fine every month, and I'm wondering if it is in this market to just pay off the house, and then the money that's coming in every month that would be for the house payment can be put towards savings. So to take investments that are not earning very well, use those investments to just make the house payment.
I would say that you're thinking of taking assets and prepaying the house after these assets have declined in value. So if you are to sell them now and turn them into a portion of your house, you have to sell them off. If you sell them off and you don't need them right this minute, you are ensuring that those losses, whatever they are permanent. Okay? So I would say if out of your normal earnings you can throw some extra towards your house at the same time that you're continuing to invest in the market, depending on your age, especially if you still have years before you're going to absolutely need that retirement money or that later life money, I would say that's when you prepay, you do a little bit of prepaying on the house. I wouldn't at this point sell assets at historically low values, at values that are so low, just to get out of your house payment.
Okay. Thank you very much. And Bob in Green Bay, on to you. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Larry. Hey, listen, I caught part of the conversation about a trust. And I had a lady come over to my house yesterday wanting to know if I wanted to buy into a company that she works for that sets up a trust versus setting up a will. And I'll take my answer off the air.
I think that you need to find a really competent trust and estates attorney and get good legal advice. This is not a subject that you in an amateurish way decide how to handle because of myths concerning probate or anything else. Please get good, competent advice from an attorney who specializes in the area of trusts and estates. Take an hour of that person's time, pay for it on the spot, and say, give me basics about what are prudent steps to take as I commence the notion of planning for my estate and for the end of my life.
Mm. Thanks, Bob. Julie in Oconomowoc. Your turn. Hi, Julie.
Hi. Got a question in regards or to have a discussion go with, this is a little blip in the market, but I am just going to be trying to recoup my same old money. How do we grow new money? So, and then also to discuss the time value of money. What we're missing out is this
Indeed.
Period of time to
yes.
have money grow, that there, compounding interest.
There's no question that right now it's true. We are in a period when things are low in value and they're not growing in the same way. It's not going to have no effect. It's just that it's going to be so important to continue habits of thrift, habits of setting aside money and growing that those dollars by not spending them. I would say the people who are doing best at this time, we will not be able to completely recover the lost time of these years that it's going to take to come back. It's not a blip. This is a historically enormous event that I think will be generation shaping, and it will be told as story to our descendants. It will be the way that our grandparents talked about possibly some of the lessons that they learned during the Great Depression. Doesn't mean that I think we're going into the Great Depression all over again, but I think it's very, very generation shaping. I would say all of the ways that you can grow new money are by cutting back on lifestyle and thinking in terms of good basic values. You will create some money to invest by spending less of what you make. And that's something that anyone can do at any time unless you're living absolutely in poverty. So that's the way I would cope with the moment.
Mm. How do we go forward with to grow this economy? We're a nation of consumerism.
That's right.
Yeah.
I think that when we turn our attention to green jobs and to infrastructure improvements, we are going to do things that are absolutely essential. We have neglected our roads, our bridges. There are so many vast, marvelous projects that are awaiting our attention. I think that that's one of the ways that we're going to rebuild and come through this in healthier shape.
And I thank you very much, Julie, for calling. And Connie, boy, our time flew by. I hope you'll come back and do this again with us.
It was a great pleasure to be with you.
It was a great pleasure to have you with us. Connie Kilmark, financial counselor, founder of Kilmark & Associates in Madison here. It's a great pleasure to have her with us. And I promise you, we'll have her back. And we'll talk some more about managing our money. Lots to talk about, that's for sure. I had lots of questions we didn't get to, and I'm sorry for that, but maybe we'll have her back for even a longer period of time next time she's on. Coming up tomorrow, though, we turn to Garden Talk, and it's Halloween, as a matter of fact, and so that's going to be fun. Milwaukee County Extension home horticulture educator Sharon Morrissey will be our guest. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.